I know a lot of you. I don't know some of you, but that's kind of good because I get more nervous when I know people. So just to tell you a little bit, not very much about myself, but just a tiny bit. I do have four kids, and so I'm a mom of four children, and many of you in this church helped me raise my children and train my children, and were a huge part of mine and my husband's and my kids' lives. And so it was very difficult to leave, but when God calls you to something, he will bless you, you know. And so we're so excited to be back and get to see everybody. And the title of my message today, which I've never really done before, but I feel like God really spoke it to my heart, is When It's Time to Sacrifice Your Promise Fulfilled. Many of you in this church know me and know my kids. It's been a couple years since we've been here, so a lot has happened. They've changed a lot. They've grown a lot. So I do have two girls and two boys, and now I have a couple of preteens. At least I'm hoping that's what it is, because I don't know. Hopefully that's what it is. But so nobody really told me about the teen, or everybody told me about the teen years. So I got all this information about teen years and how crazy and horrible and everything it was. But absolutely nobody told me about the preteen years, so I've been going through a little bit. So the other day, this is just something kind of silly, and you'll kind of see how it ties in a little bit, but just to kind of give you a view into my day, because I homeschool and we're together all the time. And so they do have friends, and they go and do that and everything, but most of the time we're together. And so the other day, one of my daughters, which I'm not going to say her name, which one it is, because they're probably going to see you guys and they're going to be like, oh, I know what you did. So, and I did not ask permission, which I probably should have. So it was a pretty heated conversation. And so she was pretty upset and pretty like this one, like she gets ramped up very quickly. And then it's like, you can't calm her down, you know, until you're just like, you got to breathe. And so it was pretty heated, and I think I told Maggie this. We were going back and forth about something. I can't even remember what the thing was. It was something very ridiculous. And I finally told her, listen, it's none of your concern, okay? And she's like, well, then why am I so concerned? I don't understand. And she slams the door, and I'm like, oh, I don't know. I've never thought of it like that before. And so, anyways, to go on. As moms, I think we know, I mean, a lot of you in here are moms, or you've had a mom, or maybe you've like helped babysit or raise children or whatever it is. So I think a lot of us know what it is to sacrifice. We know what it is most of the time to sacrifice our time, ourselves, our own desires, our own wants. But are we making the right sacrifices? And that's something that I've struggled with as a mom and going through these years with my kids and all the different stages. Am I making the right sacrifices? And also, do we know what altar means? What does it mean? So I was looking and in something called the Baker's Evangelical Dictionary, it talks about the Hebrew word, which you're probably way better at this than me, so I'm going to probably mess this up, but it's Memzein Bethkef. So it's a verbal root meaning to slaughter. Greek, it's a place of sacrifice. And then it goes on to say, in the developed temple ritual, the same word is used for both the altar of Holocaust and the altar of incense. Thus, an altar is a place where sacrifice is offered, even if it is not an event involving slaughter. So I'm going to ask a few questions. Are you quick to obey? Are you willing to make a journey? And how are you with preparing, building an altar, preparing it in your heart, and laying a sacrifice worthy to bring before God and killing that sacrifice? Do we trust that God will provide and make a way? Are we trusting that the same God who made a covenant with us and provided the promise will also take care of that promise? Or are we concerned, like my daughter was a little concerned? And forgive me, I'm going to probably read a lot because I get very distracted very easily. And since I know you, I'm a little nervous. So I'm going to probably stick to reading. But just so you know. So what if it took 25 years to fulfill a promise? And that is what you're sacrificing. What about if the sacrifice is money? It sounds trite, and most of you right now, without really searching your heart, can probably say, yeah, I could sacrifice that. So let's talk a minute about the wrong kind of sacrificing. But how many of us sacrifice to make that extra money because we may need it, a rainy day fund, which happens a lot in my house, by the way. It's nice to have extra spending money. I know, God, you said that you would provide, but what if? Like, what if my kids can't do all these activities? What if my kids aren't popular because they're not wearing the right clothes or whatever it may be? There is a lot that can go into that. But so we make sacrifices because now we need to stick our hands in it. And I can't tell you how many times my husband and I were burning the candle at both ends because we were working and working and sacrificing, you know, just to either make ends meet or to let our kids have extra or whatever the case was. And God, it was amazing because there was times where work dried up completely and it was a shock. And maybe for a month at a time, neither of us had anything. And that was a shock from going from both of us being gone all the time to nothing. But it was amazing because every single time God provided more than we ever could have if we were both working our tails off. And I'm not saying work is bad, so don't go home and be like, she told me I don't have to work and all this stuff, because that is not what I'm saying, because I still work and I still do things. But it is different when God's calling you to sacrifice something and you're not willing to give that up. And whatever that is for you, it could be money, it could be whatever it is. You know, there's a million different things it could be for each one of us. And it's just the difference of your own personal relationship and walk with the Lord, what he's asking you to lay before him, and what you're at. What you're making important in your life. So I was asking God, and this is just a silly little thing, but I was asking God if I should have taken on this extra job that I had. It was causing a lot of unrest in my kids, which I told them, you're going to be fine. I'm fine. We're all fine. And every time before I would go, but it was causing a lot of turmoil, a lot of unrest, and it also made me exhausted. And my husband didn't want me to take it on. But I argued my point to the point where he was like, do whatever you want. You're going to, you know, just do whatever. It's fine. And but he's like, you're going to regret it. And so it took me a long time, because I would not admit it to him, but I did. I really, really regretted it. And I was like, I should have just listened. And but I didn't want to let go of it. And now it had turned into, we need it. Like, we need it to survive. And now, instead of it just being this extra thing, it was something I was like, I can't quit now. You know, so many people are counting on me. What's my boss going to think? He's an atheist, and he knows I'm a Christian. I'm a pastor's wife now, and so what is he going to think of me if I just quit? And I want the extra spending money and all of these things, or I want people to be proud of me, and it matters to me what they think of me. And so what it all came down to is it was causing a lot of sacrifice, but the wrong kind of sacrifice, the sacrifice that God was not asking me to make. He didn't ask me to make this sacrifice. It would have been a lot different if he'd have been like, listen, I want you to do this, you know, and it would have been completely different. But he wasn't asking that of me. And he wasn't calling me to it. And it wasn't necessary. It really wasn't necessary when it came down to it. We were just used to, at that point, extra. And so so we felt like that's what we needed. It was a sacrifice for my kids, a sacrifice of what I could bring to the table as a wife and a mom, a sacrifice of my emotions and the health thereof, and I was sacrificing my sanity. And I was exhausted. I felt guilty for leaving my kids. But in all of that, like I said, I'm not saying any of that is necessarily wrong, maybe for you, but the problem for me is I knew he was telling me to let it go. That was the issue. I knew he was telling me to let it go, and I was fighting it. And a few days later, I opened my Bible to Proverbs, because I was seeking him on it, but it's like I wanted to hear what I wanted to hear. And so I opened up to Proverbs, and I don't do this very much, where I just open the Bible and I'm like, okay, God, you're just going to have to, like, show me, like, you know, and point to a verse, and this is going to be it, you know. And so I was just kind of reading sporadically all over those same open pages. And my eyes went to chapter 17, verse 1 in Proverbs. It says, better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. I was like, I didn't really get it, and it was a weird verse for me, and but I was being so thick-headed. I mean, it's probably obvious to all of you, like, well, duh, like, but for me, I really didn't get it, and I was like, but I felt to read it again and again, and my heart, I really wanted to understand it, so I read it again, and I'm just going to say it again. So better a dry crust with peace and quiet than a house full of feasting with strife. And this was a verse I realized that was speaking directly to me in my situation, my life, and my home. There had been a lot of major strife lately. Could this be why? There were too many sacrifices of family, kids, marriage, etc. And what I took away was it would be better to have little or nothing and have no strife or quietness therewith than a house full of sacrifices with strife. So now what am I going to do with that? We've talked about the wrong kind of sacrifices, so now I'm going to talk about the one that God is asking us to make. What are we supposed to bring to the altar? Sacrifice. But how are our hearts supposed to be when bringing? I can bring this to him and say, I lay this on the altar. This job, this extra what, this child, or my marriage, whatever it may be, you fill in the blank. If you want me to let this go, and if you want this to die, then let the knife fall. But if you have a different sacrifice, then provide. So I thought of Abraham and Isaac. So in Genesis 22, I'm just going to read a little bit. Genesis 22, 1 through 14 says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here am I, he replied. Then God said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servant, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will be back to you. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, father. Yes, my son, Abraham replied, the fire and the wood are here. Isaac said, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac, laid him on the altar and on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. Here I am, he replied. Do not lay a hand on the boy, he said. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. This is the thing. God knows and he sees all. If we end up sacrificing the prized possession, he will provide. If he doesn't want us to kill it, but just wants to see if we're willing, then he will provide a perfect sacrifice in his place. There will be a ram in the bushes. And another thing is, God knows if we will truly give him everything. He does give us free will. We're not robots. So maybe this is a heart issue all along. Funnily enough, in verse 3 of the same chapter in Proverbs, that verse says, but the Lord tests the heart. He ultimately knows what we're going to choose, but he also sees there may be some work that needs to take place in our hearts, and he begins a process. There's the walk up the mountain with our promise that's taken many years to fulfill. There's the initial saying, yes, I will obey in the first place. There's the building of the altar, that thing you're building which is meant to ultimately sacrifice or kill your promise. And then there's the work involved. God promises he who began a good work in you is faithful to complete it. There's the laying down of the promise or promise that has finally been fulfilled. And then there's the trust and faith that God will provide. There's the raising of the knife. There's the obedience of the heart that with or without that promise, you choose to follow and obey him. Maybe it's been 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, and you haven't seen anything come to pass. And maybe it's finally come to pass and he's wanting to see if you'll obey him and trust him. Think of this. Sarah was barren. They were old by the time that promise had come to pass. It was recorded that Abram was 75 years old when he heard the promise, which you can read in chapter 12, verse 2 in Genesis. It says, I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on the earth will be blessed through you. In chapter 15, verses 1 through 6, I'm just going to read that. real quick. So 15, 1 through 6. After this, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield, your very great reward. But Abram said, O sovereign Lord, what can you give me since I remain childless? And the one who will inherit my estate is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, you have given me no children, so a servant in my household will be my heir. Then the word of the Lord came to him, this man will not be your heir, but a son coming from your own body will be your heir. He took him outside and said, look up at the heavens and count the stars. If indeed you can count them, then he said to him, so shall your offspring be. Abram believed the Lord, and he credits him as righteousness. And then 10 years after they had been living in Canaan, Abram and Sarah took matters into their own hands, and then problems followed suit. So in Genesis chapter 16, verses 1 through 6, I'm going to read that real quick. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had borne him no children, but she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, the Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family through her. Abram agreed to what Sarai said. So after Abram had been living in Canaan 10 years, Sarai, his wife, took her Egyptian maidservant Hagar and gave her to her husband to be his wife. He slept with Hagar, and she conceived. When she knew she was pregnant, she began to despise her mistress. Then Sarai said to Abram, you're responsible for the wrong I'm suffering. I put my servant in your arms, and now that she knows she's pregnant, she despises me. May the Lord judge between you and me. Your servant is in your hands, Abram said. Do with her whatever you think best. Then Sarai mistreated Hagar, so she fled from her. So Abraham was 86 when Hagar had Ishmael, but Ishmael was not the promise fulfilled. It isn't until chapter 17 when Abraham is 99 years old when we start to see God's promise being fulfilled. So verses 1 and 2 in chapter 17 says, when Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to him and said, I am God Almighty, walk before me and be blameless. I will confirm my covenant between me and you and will greatly increase your numbers. And then it goes on in verse 15 through 21. God said to Abraham, as for Sarai, your wife, you are no longer to call her Sarai. Her name will be Sarah. I will bless her, and I will surely give you a son by her. I will bless her that she will be the mother of nations. Kings of peoples will come from her. Abraham fell face down. He laughed and said to himself, will a son be born to a man 100 years old? Will Sarah bear a child at the age of 90? And Abraham said to God, if only Ishmael might live under your blessing. Then God said, yes, but your wife Sarah will bear you a son, and you will call him Isaac. I will establish my covenant with him as an everlasting covenant for his descendants after him. So 25 years later, after God had initially spoken his promise to Abraham that he would make him into a great nation, how many of you had a promise spoken to you by the Lord or over you, and years later, you're still waiting to see it come to pass? Maybe it's a child that had turned their back on the Lord, and now you're still seeing the barrenness. They're on drugs, on the street, in jail, etc. Or maybe he's spoken to you about your marriage, that it'll be restored. Or you'll have a child, or you will be set free, or you will be healed. God is a God of his word. And think of it, that promise had finally come to pass, and God was asking him to sacrifice it. What would your response have been? This was your promise come to pass. You want me to do what, God? But I need him. I need this. Here's the thing. I could even say, for me, I mean, it would be so hard. I can't even imagine, really, to go that long and to know that your wife is barren, and then after all of that, to be that obedient that quick. And not be like, but I need this. You know, this is what you promised me. Or I worked so hard for this, or I need the extra money, or I went to school for this, and you provided this for me, and now you're asking me to kill it? I don't get it, but I need to live near my family. But I mean, that's something I used to say, I need it, and I can't have it, or I can't imagine if I would have ended up living by my family, and then he would have said, nope, you know. But, or it can be, I need these pills because they're helping me feel better. Or I need this baby after all this fertility drugs or the barrenness. You're asking me to sacrifice and love you more than this baby I'm finally holding in my arms. And think of it, barrenness until the age of 99 and 100, and then you have to sacrifice it all. Would your answer be yes, God? Would you have packed up everything, including your most precious promise or your prized possession, and went on a journey, walked up a mountain, built an altar, only to raise a knife and sacrifice that promise that had come to pass? God may not be asking you to climb a mountain, build a legit altar, and raise a knife to actually kill whatever it is. But there is the matter of the heart. He's asking you to make the journey, to trust him no matter what, to lay down that thing that's finally come to pass in your life, or even that promise of that thing that has come to that is going to come to pass in your life. That thing you've waited for, cried for, worked so hard for, and wanted so desperately. God tries the heart. Those around you may not understand. They may talk. They may not need, or you may not need to tell them or to try to explain yourself. And that was something that was huge for me in that circumstance. How am I going to explain this to people? What did Abraham tell people? So let's just look into that for a second, because he didn't. First of all, in verse 3, he got up early, got everything ready, and left. Verse 4, it took 3 days until he even saw the place. And what did he tell the men that he had taken with them? In verse 5, it says, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then come back to you." So now it's just Abraham and Isaac. So what did Isaac ask in verse 7? "So here is the fire and the wood, but where is the sacrifice?" And how did Abraham respond? In verse 8, he responded, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." This was a private thing. It was between God, Abraham, and his son, his promise fulfilled. And even to his son, he wasn't trying to explain what God had told him or what he might be doing. He was simply stating that God will provide. So what do we tell people? God will provide. Were there tears? Probably. Was there obedience? Most definitely. Was there work involved? A journey to get to the place he was to build the altar and the building of the altar? Yes. But was there faith and trust that God would provide? Yes, most definitely. In Genesis 22 again, in verse 10, I'm just going to read that again. "Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, 'Abraham, Abraham.' 'Here I am,' he replied. 'Do not lay a hand on the boy,' he said, 'and do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld me, your son, your only son.' Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by his horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, 'The Lord will provide,' and to this day it's said, 'On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided.'" So you may be able to keep that job or whatever else you have, but God will test your heart to see if you're willing, that you fear or love God above it, even above that promise fulfilled. He requires a journey, like I said before, building an altar, grabbing that knife, and the willingness to follow through. Sometimes we must kill it, and that is the sacrifice. But other times, he only wants to see that you love him above it all, and that you're going to trust that he will provide. And he provides a ram in the bushes. Either way, he's looking to see the willingness, the obedience, the sacrifice, the love for him above it all. No matter what he will provide, of this you can be sure. Somebody, John H. Samis, said, "But we never can prove the delights of his love until on the altar we lay." Maybe some of us, if we were truly honest with ourselves, would admit that we wouldn't be so quick to be obedient. Or maybe God is pointing to something in our lives that we love more than him. Something that we have given our blood, sweat, and tears to, that we love or have grown comfortable in, or having, or simply that we want. God is asking, "Carolyn, take that thing, whom or which you love, and offer it as a burnt offering to me." So I've had several things in my life, of course, but here is one. God promised me freedom, victory over fear, anxiety, and OCD. It was taking a lot of years, lots of hard work, believing, but then seeing barrenness, believing, seeing barrenness. Pretty soon, it became a lot of years later, and I decided it's taking way too long. I decided to stick my hands in it. And this is the part I want to say beforehand. I'm not saying these things are wrong, but for me, this is just my own personal walk. So I said, "What's the harm? I'm going to take those pills that all the doctors are saying, you need to just get on these pills." And then I started to depend heavily on those. They were bringing about that promise, weren't they? At least they made it more manageable. But with it came some other problems, and which reminds me of when Abraham and Sarah took matters into their own hands and look at the problems that came from it. How many of you have stuck your hands in it because it's just taking too long, and then problems come from it? So later on, I knew the Lord had freed me. This was quite a while later, months later. Actually, years. I would start a certain pill, and it didn't work, so I'd have to try another one. So this was about a few months in from the one that actually was working for me. I knew the Lord had freed me. There was something that had happened, and it was a really deep within freedom, and I knew that he had. So then what happened is I went back to my room that I was staying, and I was at a conference, a women's conference, actually. And I was in that room, and I was faced with those pills, which sounds so silly because I knew the Lord had freed me. Well, I saw the pills, and I was like, I could dump them. And then I was like, something in me was just like, do I really need to let go of them? Like, do I really believe God has completely healed me? Or what's the harm in just taking them to be on the safe side? I better take them because I'm not supposed to get off cold turkey. That's what they said. So they have to wean me off slowly, and I have to do what the doc said, so I continued. Mind you, I knew this is a little different because I knew that God was calling me to let go of them and to trust him, and that's the difference. But the fear of getting off, and it's so complicated, and I'm messing this up, I just continued. So for the next year, I continued, and I kept thinking, I wish I had just gotten off them like I was supposed to, because it really wasn't doing. It was just kind of taking the edge off of it, but I was still pretty bad. So for the next year, I continued. But now I was so dependent on them and fearful to go without. So it starts to get to the point where I'm getting worse and worse again. And I was like, are they just making me worse? Which, in fact, they can do that if you're on a lot longer than what you're supposed to. I started to get to the point where I was like, I just want to feel the real me. Like, how would I really handle this? Is this really me or is this the pills? Like, I didn't know. And even that was causing anxiety to me. Then came another day later on where I knew, again, he was asking me to let go of him and to sacrifice that and to trust that he would provide. So I did it. And maybe you're thinking, oh, like it was the best thing in the world and I was totally great. And actually, that's not what happened. At first, I was just being obedient to what I knew he was telling me to do. But I was still, instead of looking to him, I was actually still looking about to how I felt. And I felt awful. Physically, it made me sick to the point where my doctor was like, I don't know what's going on with you. You shouldn't still be having this. It's been too long. Let's get an MRI. That came back normal, and I had some sinus congestion. So I was like, great. That's all of this is. And so I was just tired. I was tired of feeling sick. The doctors couldn't figure it out. And then I was like, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe I wasn't supposed to do that. But what this is something that did happen. When I finally did take my eyes off that sacrifice and looked up, I could see the lamb in the bushes. In Genesis 22:13, I'm almost done. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by his horns. Did you know that that lamb represents Jesus Christ? Even if we've sacrificed, we've been obedient, and he tells you, don't kill it, you get to keep it, because you've shown me you'll be obedient and you love me more. You may still be looking at that perfect promise because you're excited you get to keep it. Or maybe you're still looking at the barrenness and the promise hasn't come to pass and you're so focused on that. You need to look up to see the lamb he has provided for you to sacrifice in its place. Look up. Only then will your eyes behold Jesus Christ, the ultimate and perfect sacrifice. You may have proven your obedience, your love, but you now physically have to lift your eyes up and look and behold Jesus Christ. He is the perfect sacrifice. In John 3:16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but have everlasting life. And also in John 10:10, it says, the thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. And I have come that they might have life and have that more abundantly. So maybe God has pinpointed something in your life that he's asking you to take and to sacrifice or to lay on the altar. What is your response going to be? Will you wake up early in the morning of his new mercies and trust him to provide? Will you lay your sacrifice before the Lord on the altar of worship? Will you fully trust God to provide his son Jesus? Will you finally look up and see Jesus Christ, who has given his life so that we may have an abundant life? I want you and I urge you to listen to that. Maybe it's just this still small voice or it's something that you're thinking of in your life. This is not to put anybody down if you're dealing with any of these things. I don't know about it, but I just, everybody has their thing. And if you can hear that whisper of that thing in your life while I was talking, whatever it may be, I just strongly urge you to obey the Lord. Don't hesitate any longer. Don't try to stick your hands in it. You know what he's calling you to do. You know that you know. And it comes down to obedience and trust. He will be pleased with your obedience and love for him in the laying down of the promise yet to come or that promise that's been fulfilled, and he will provide a ram in the bushes. That's it.